It's still morning, so good morning, Council. Our final matter on the oral calendar for today is in the matter of the welfare of ZSJ Child. Council, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 to appellant's counsel. You'd like to use that time for rebuttal. The timing restrictions are indicated in the light and clock and the lectern, which you can raise or lower at your convenience for your height. Oh, you're out of glasses.
Sorry about that.
You have to drink from the pitcher. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so that we can keep track of who's making which argument in the audio recording of the proceeding. And counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I'm going to adjust this podium just a
sure. There's a button here. Right in front.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Chang Lau. I am an assistant public defender, and I represent the appellant ZSJ. In my brief, I raised 2 issues for this court to consider. Today, I would like to focus the court's attention on the first. It asks this court to reverse the district court's order granting the state's EJJ motion because the record does not establish by clear and convincing evidence that designating appellant EJJ was in the interest of public safety. Now, I want to start by giving my forest from the trees framing of this case. I think at the heart of it, this case is about whether putting my client on EJJ better served public safety than if he were kept in a traditional non-EJJ juvenile setting. And the secondary question, which is closely in line with that question, is whether or not the state proved that EJJ was better for public safety. And if not, then my client should have been kept in the traditional juvenile setting. The state didn't present evidence here that shows that placing my client on EJJ better serve public safety. And I think at the heart of it is that my client could complete and receive the same treatment if he were kept in traditional juvenile system as if he were designated EJJ.
Wasn't there a dispute about the length of time necessary for treatment extending over into adulthood?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a dispute, Your Honor. I think the EJJ study provided that it would take anywhere between 16 to 24 months to complete treatment. But I think the person who completed that study clarified that when they made that calculation, they were basing it on the estimated amount of time it would take to complete outpatient treatment. But at that same hearing, that same person conceded or acknowledged, I don't know that they were conceding or anything, but they acknowledged that there were 3 separate inpatient programs that my client qualified for and that were appropriate in treating what he needed to be treated for, and that one of them he could complete in anywhere between 6 to 9 months. That would provide both sex offender treatment programming and drug treatment simultaneously. And so he had 20 months remaining at the time of the contested hearing, before he turned 19, before he aged out of that traditional juvenile system. He had more than twice the amount of time to complete that program that the probation agent identified. And he still does. He still does. I mean, even in the time that it takes to resolve this matter on appeal, my client will still have enough time, likely have enough time, before he turns 19 to complete that treatment program. And this is in the record, but it wasn't something that was considered for the purposes of deciding the EJJ motion. He has been tentatively admitted.
Do you mind? I don't mean to catch you in your flow, but you say it was not considered by the district court. You described the evidence, I think, from the probation agent about the alternatives for inpatient and outpatient. And you say it wasn't considered by the district court? Is that what you meant to say?
No, I'm actually referring to a particular document that was admitted into the record that came after I filed the notice of appeal and statement of the case. And basically it shows it's an acceptance letter from West Central Juvenile Correctional Facility accepting my client into that program.
So you're saying it's not in the record on appeal, but it's in the record in the district court?
That's correct. Right.
So I guess, all right, thank you for that correction. So CJ has since been accepted. It's outside the record, not something that we're going to consider. I guess what I want to ask you is maybe a little, again, a step back question. I appreciate your argument about the record being adequate to show the public safety issue, but I guess I, from our perspective, how does this court determine whether the record is adequate or inadequate based on your arguments that, to me, are asking us to weigh the evidence? And we don't know, given the terse nature of the district court's written decision, how the district court weighed the evidence. For example, from the probation agent at the hearing, we don't know how the district court viewed that. Isn't that right? Doesn't that put us in a bit of a box to give you relief on the first issue that you'd like us to focus on?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the court can resolve this case based on that second issue. I'd urge the court not to, simply because it's just more time. More time is clicking, and more time is passing, and less time remains for my client before he turns 19, which, you know, just means that in all likelihood he's not going to be able to complete treatment if we remand for further fact-finding, and then we potentially have to appeal. I don't think there's any real disputed facts in this case. I think the EJJ study provided that my client couldn't complete treatment, but that mistaken notion was rectified at the contested EJJ hearing, where the probation agent indicated that my client qualified for inpatient treatment program, and that programming, that same agent provided that program could be completed by my client, and it would provide the necessary services to mitigate the risk he posed to public safety.
But for us to rule in your favor on that at this point in the case, wouldn't it require us to essentially say, based on the cross-examination of the probation agent at the EJJ hearing, that the child, CJ in this case, should receive inpatient of this, you know, duration that was indicated at the hearing? I mean, we can't do that, right? That's not the role for the appellate court.
I mean, I disagree if it's entirely undisputed.
I don't know. I mean, the agent ended, you know, was asked, right? And it was follow-up questioning anyway. The agent was asked whether the cross-examination had changed the agent's opinion that this child needed the 16 to 24 months, and the agent said no. So, I mean, there is some play there, I think, in terms of the evidence for the district court's consideration.
I mean, to call that a dispute of fact based on the agent's testimony that their minds had not changed, which is completely, like, the need for that 16 to 24 months after the discussion that was had during cross-examination is completely unsubstantiated. Mm-hmm. It's completely unsubstantiated. The agent on cross-examination stated that this treatment is available to my client, that it would help lower his risk to public safety, and that he can complete it in the time before he turned 19.
Lower the risk of public safety, but how would we know without weighing the evidence that it would lower the risk of public safety sufficiently for the district court to conclude that EJJ is not the appropriate avenue?
Because the state presented no other evidence as to what might lower his risk, right? The only thing that the state presented to say that the risk could be lowered, sufficiently lowered, is treatment. They didn't say probation or extended supervision beyond the completion of treatment would lower public safety. That was not an argument they made. They don't make that argument now. The only argument is that he needs treatment, and because he does not have enough time to complete treatment, he will be a public safety risk if he is not designated EJJ. But that was proven wrong. That was proven wrong at the contested EJJ hearing. He can complete the treatment, and the agent testified that 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 treatment will mitigate his risk to public safety. And I will also say that we have to take into consideration the fact that, you know, the third and the fourth factors are not being contested in this case by the state, right? There is no history of delinquency. I think there's like a use of tobacco under the age of 18 petty adjudication. But outside of that, there's nothing. And the probation agent in the EJJ study, and I don't think anybody disputes this, acknowledges that my client is amenable to treatment, that he can do it. He can comply with treatment and he can complete it. And so given the totality of that, I do not see how public safety would be better served by requiring my client do treatment while he's in EJJ and then having a lengthier period of time under court jurisdiction. The state just hasn't proven that. And as the state has the burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that EJJ is necessary and it's failed to do that here, I do think that the court can say that the district court abuses discretion and the case should remain in a traditional juvenile court. I mean, if the court doesn't have any further questions, then I would cede the remainder of my time.
You will also have an additional 5 minutes, everybody.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel for the state.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Robert Inger. I am an assistant Beltrami County attorney representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, I'm not going to go over what our brief said. I know that the court's fully aware of what they're saying. I'm fully aware of the arguments that the state is making. I would say it's just as an issue with respect to overturning the EJJ status itself. If we're arguing that the findings right now are not good enough for the court to decide, then I would submit that they're not good enough to overturn. I do believe, and I would. My argument with the second point was not very long, because I will concede those findings were not very strong with respect to covering the six elements that the court was supposed to cover.
When you say not very strong, that's a bit of a euphemism.
The only thing I would say, Your Honor, the very last finding that he said that the county has, by a clear and convincing evidence, proven that public safety would be interest by going EJJ.
That doesn't discuss any of the six.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. And I concede the fact that the findings are not, they certainly are not what the court would.
You don't have to dance around it.
I apologize. I believe that this matter should be remanded back to the district court judge for better findings of fact. I would say that I know that the public defender is looking at saying the testimony by Ms. Linder from the public probation office did agree and acknowledge there is an expedited 6 or 9 month program that would be available in that facility. But I'd like to point out to the court that it was a question asked by the public defender if she was aware of such. She also said that probation said it was a new program that she's not had any prior experience with, so she really couldn't say that he would graduate within 6 or 9 months in that program. And it had been her experience that all the sexual offender programs that the juveniles have been going through, which she's working with, have taken 16 to 24 weeks. Months, Your Honor, months. And right now, and I acknowledge what the public defender, what applicant just said, is right now we're less than 2 months away from this young man's 18th birthday. And that puts us, if we go back then, we end up in trial. That's going to take some time. Getting set for a disposition after PDI is done, that's going to take some time. It's very well likely that there's going to be less than a year left between his 18th birthday and his 19th birthday. And it could be less, that he might not have 9 months even. We don't know that. The probation officer said she couldn't say that he would. So, again, I do believe that the judge had heard all the arguments, had heard the cross-examination, had been part of the hearing process the whole time. It hadn't been heard, not one step away from any other judge. It was always assigned to him once the initial probation or public defender removed the first judge. So,
counsel, I do appreciate your candor to the court and your acknowledgement that the findings of fact, at least I'm hearing you to say that they are not sufficient for us to make a ruling, the second issue that the appellant raised. I do want to touch on the first issue, though. I think if I understand the appellant's argument, and I may be misstating it, and you can feel free to correct me as well as, of course, on the record. But what they're saying is that the county proceeded at this hearing with the assumption that the child should receive outpatient treatment, and that's where the 16 to 20 months, or 20, maybe it was 24 months, 16 to 24 months timeline came from, and that it was pointed out to the probation agent at the hearing that this is a child who, at least as of the time of the evidentiary hearing, I don't know if things have changed, doesn't have a home to be in, and so needs an inpatient treatment. I mean, so that's how I interpreted the evidence. Maybe I'm wrong about that, you know, and like I said, correct me. I guess I'm asking you, did the state present a prima facie case that supports the extension of EJJ, given that narrow focus on outpatient when it appears it's a child that needs inpatient? And maybe I'm misanalyzing it, and you can tell me why.
Your Honor, I don't believe that you're miscategorizing it. Okay. I do believe that the state proved or argued four of the six public safety interest factors found in the statute. I think that we had proven that this was a serious offense, and it is a serious offense. I do acknowledge that it has a 36-month presumptive stay if it was by an adult. So that would, you know, having that hung over his head could push him or gently nudge him or strong-arm him to completing the treatment that he needs to complete, because he doesn't want to have an adult criminal sentence. I do think that the act or the culpability by the juvenile, I think that's all on his own. He's the only one who was involved in it. It's true there was not a gun involved. It's true there was not skin to skin. It's true there was not any coercion to do it. But I would point out to the court that this young, the victim, had said when he first started doing it, he asked her to stop. And even by his own admission and his own interview with law enforcement, he said he did momentarily stop. And then he went back and did something even worse than he was doing before. So I would say that with respect to culpability, him saying he is sorry after a while, that just doing that by itself is not enough to say that he's not culpable. I would also say that with respect to that issue, he did ask her not to tell anyone. And I believe that, you know, I don't know what was going on, but asking her not to tell anyone, I'm thinking that he's just looking out for himself at that time. So, and I do believe that the fifth and sixth factor were in our favor. I know we've spent a lot of time on Ms. Linder's.
Well, that's exactly what I'm asking you about are the fifth and sixth factor. I appreciate that this is a six-factor analysis. It's totality. I think the appellant has argued that there really was no contest on the third and fourth factor. You know, it's a situation where the prior record of delinquency is just incredibly slight, right? Just a petty misdemeanor, I think, for tobacco use.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then we have a programming history where it's actually, he's very compliant and, in fact, was at the time of the hearing very compliant with all of his programming. So if we go to just the fifth and sixth factor, just make the best case you can that the state presented sufficient evidence that under the fifth and sixth factor, we needed this extension, right? The EJJ designation to have the extended period of time. If the agent's testimony is that there's programming available within the juvenile justice timeline, why do we need EJJ? I mean, did the state present sufficient evidence?
I believe we did, Your Honor. I believe we did. I just don't think that it's reflected in the findings of fact what we did. I acknowledge that the judge did not go through each individual factor and say who's it in favor of. I understand, and the court understands, that the judge doesn't necessarily have to consider each and every factor in that six-part test. But we would also show to the court the two parts that are supposed to be emphasized. I do believe that we met the one of the two, and I'm conceding that we did not meet the other one because Mr. Joyce never had a problem where he had been in a delinquent situation prior to this. So I would argue to the court that I think that the state at the hearing presented enough evidence for the court to find the child under EJJ status. Your Honor, if there are no more questions, I am completed.
It appears there are no more questions from the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counselor Appellant, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Chang Lau for the appellant.
Thank you.
There are just a few things I want to quickly touch on in these 5 minutes, but I think Judge Bravel had asked me about outpatient in his testimony of still needing the 16 to 24 months to complete the treatment. I mean, I think Judge Bratwold brought up a really good point during opposing counsel's time, which is that he has nowhere to go if he were to be required to complete outpatient treatment program. And that actually cuts against the argument that outpatient treatment is better than inpatient treatment. Now, that aside, I simply just do not believe there's any evidence to support this notion that outpatient treatment is somehow better than inpatient treatment. The state didn't present that. And so the state, the opposing counsel came up and basically conceded the second point and said that the record is not good enough to allow for this court to overturn the EJJ order. But the state forgets that the burden is on it to prove that EJJ is appropriate. That this order was supported by the record. And even though the findings aren't sufficient, the remedy for that is to remand for further findings, our argument is that the record is insufficient to establish that EJJ is appropriate in this case. I mean, and for a lot of the reasons that Judge Bravel pointed out.
Counsel, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm not pointing out anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. That yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
I think you hear them that way because they fit.
Correct. I just want to hear what I want to hear.
No, that's fine. You go right ahead.
With regards to the seriousness of the offense, and this is something that I touched on in my reply brief. I don't know that I need to belabor this, but I don't. The factor is not that, you know, this is a repugnant thing that my client did and that is enough to favor EJJ. It's you have to look at the dangerousness in relation to public safety, right? Whether it shows that he is dangerous, he's a risk to public safety. And, you know, as I already argued and I won't belabor, I don't think given the factual circumstances here, the way the offense was committed, that is shown, that the way he committed this offense shows that he is a risk to public safety. Now, the last thing I want to say is that...
I'm sorry. What are you saying about factor A?
The first factor?
The first factor, rather. I just looked at the brief and I used A. Yeah, the first factor, the seriousness of the offense. What are precisely
the seriousness of the offense is not looked at in sort of a vacuum, right? You're not just looking at, is this a good or bad crime? There's no such thing as a good crime, I suppose. But
To determine whether there's a risk and what factors,
well, the
is a
the factor specifically states the seriousness of the alleged offense in terms of community
protection. Right.
And so the point I'm trying to make, and probably not making very well, is that given the factual circumstances surrounding how this offense occurred, given the remorse that my client showed, given he apologized a bunch, according to his the victim, immediately after this occurred, after he truly realized that what he was doing was wrong or was unwelcome, I don't think it shows that he's going to continue to do this. That this is a scofflaw that, you know, doesn't care how what they do affects people, right? By all accounts, seemingly, the circumstances surrounding how this offense occurred and immediately after shows that he is trying to make amends. He admitted the offense to the investigator immediately after he was confronted with it. He cried and apologized. When we're looking at it from a perspective of community protection, I do not think that the offense, the way it was committed, shows that he is a risk to public safety.
So it couldn't. Your argument is the record could not support a determination had that been written out that first factor supported EJJ.
Well, I don't.
Is that
yes? Yeah.
That's what
yes,
you're saying.
And I don't think that factor in. I mean, even if it supports EJJ, I don't think that in and of itself shows that EJJ is necessary.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out. I think as we are with a multi-factor test.
Correct.
That the district court is supposed to do that balancing.
Yeah.
And what it means when some factors might favor, might not, or as a matter of law, could not, that's what I'm trying to sort of understand
argument. And you seem to be arguing that as a matter of law, the circumstances associated with how the offense occurred and the immediate aftermath could not support a conclusion that the seriousness factor weighs in favor of EJJ? That's what you're saying?
No. I think...
Because if the answer is no, you're asking us to weigh that factor. Yes?
No, I'm asking... I'll say even if that factor weighs in favor of EJJ, I do not think that factor alone supports a designation to EJJ, is what I'm trying to argue, as a matter of law.
Because
it still does not establish that EJJ is necessary for public safety, right? Because there's nothing about the crime in which it was committed that shows more time on supervision after the completion of treatment is required in order to better serve public safety. Nothing. And so I am out of time. I'd ask this court to reverse the district court's EJJ order. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And thank you for your argument. Both counsel, very well done, especially Mr. Inger. It's a tough thing to come to court and say, this is what I argued in my brief, but I'm willing to retreat from it. That's appreciated. Candor is a difficult thing. Yes. Difficult thing. It's a great concept, and all lawyers agree to it. And then once it's time to have the opportunity to exercise it. It's really hard to do, but we appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your time, Your Honor. And look, kind words, just like the person who was sitting in his chair before me, this is my first time.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of first times.
Your first time, too?
It is not my first time.
Not your first time. All right, I was going to say.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Great job, both of you. Thank you. This is our last matter on for oral argument, so we are in recess.
Thank you.